You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
Fallout from the FBI investigation of former Congressman Wiener continues to drop onto the Clinton campaign. WikiLeaks' Assange says he'll continue to dox, but denies he's doing so with Russian help. IoT-driven DDoS fears continue. A new exploit kit is replacing earlier stars in the criminal firmament. NIST issues a cybersecurity workforce framework. NSA promotes its Day of Cyber, and the Cynet 16 are introduced in Washington. I'm Dave Bittner in Baltimore with your CyberWire summary for Thursday, November 3rd, 2016. More continues to emerge on the FBI's renewed investigation of emails that allegedly found their way from former Secretary of State Clinton's private server to a laptop belonging to former New York Representative Anthony Weiner. It's thought that they are on the laptop because of Weiner's connection to his now estranged wife, Huma Abedin, a close aide of Ms. Clinton. The number of emails is very large, in the hundreds of thousands, and machines used by key Clinton advisors that were thought to have been destroyed are now reported to be under active exploitation by the FBI. Sources are telling various news outlets that FBI investigators have high confidence that five unnamed foreign intelligence services succeeded in compromising the former secretary's now decommissioned and presumably not replaced private server. We leave speculation about which five nations are suspected as an exercise for the listener. WikiLeaks continues to make good on its promise to release discreditable documents related to the election, with a particular animus directed at the Clinton campaign. More are expected before next Tuesday's election. Most of the recently released emails have been associated with campaign manager Podesta, and the general climate of opinion holds that they were taken by Russian intelligence services. But WikiLeaks' leader Julian Assange denies that he's getting those documents from Russia. Where he's getting them, he isn't saying, but the releases do seem generally aligned with Russian interests. Concerns, of course, about Russian influence on U.S. elections continue. Among those concerns are the prospect of distributed denial-of-service campaigns against election-related targets. DDoS fears have risen since the Mirai Internet of Things botnet attacks last month. Bitdefender reports finding an exploitable vulnerability in widely used web cameras that would render them susceptible to botnet herding. Looking back at the DDoS attack sustained by Dyn 2 weeks ago, the Online Trust Association says that the attacks could have easily been prevented with better secured IoT devices. That's no doubt true enough, but in fact such devices are widely deployed and haven't been securely provisioned. And mopping up so very large a number of insecure devices is a far from trivial challenge. Many observers have discerned signs of ISPs becoming more willing to take an active role in combating IoT-based DDoS, but others raise doubts. Net neutrality policies and regulations are thought by many to be likely to inhibit ISPs from doing so. Analysts think such companies would assume non-negligible regulatory risk. Hacktivism and state-sponsored cyber activity may have bulked large in the news recently, but it would be a mistake to think that more conventional cybercrime has gone into any temporary eclipse. The Angler, Neutrino, and nuclear exploit kits have been put down, but the Sundown exploit kit is increasingly occupying their niche in the criminal ecosystem. Hospitals in the UK continue their recovery from a criminal attack they sustained over the past week, and news has broken of a major data breach among New Zealand nursing services. As technology evolves, one area that's grown in sophistication is telecommunications, with most new subscribers choosing voice over IP over traditional landlines. There are generally cost savings and productivity gains to be had, but also concerns about reliability and attack surface. We checked in with Edward Fox from telecommunications provider MetTel to get his perspective on secure telecommunications.
Out in the wild, there's many carriers, and just for the simple fact that many enterprises and end users, just like we're talking on Skype today, we're mixing data and voice. We're having a great connection, but if something was to happen in between, and if that particular attack is in the path of where our voice is going, it can be affected. We try to keep the voice and data networks as segregated as possible, although, you know, I have to say 85% of our customers that we serve today have converged last miles. But usually the last mile is not it, when you're talking about DDoS, usually the last mile is not where the biggest issues are. So we do that, as well as we keep a trusted versus untrusted networks. And that allows us to keep the untrusted side beefier and, you know, able to take on traffic that it's not ready for and protect the trusted side of the network. We spent a little extra money doing it, but it's on the voice side, it's a architecture that has saved us multiple times.
Can you dig into that a little bit more? What are we talking about when we're talking about a trusted and untrusted network configuration?
Yeah, so just as an example, in our voice network, we have proxies or session border controllers that face different networks. And we have those completely segregated on completely different networks. And we have those that register endpoints and talk to our customers and talk to their PBXs and Polycom phones on their desk. And then we have those which talk to the rest of the world. And we treat those very differently in how we broadcast IP addresses and where we actually put them in the network.
So let's say I'm someone starting up my own organization and I know I'm going to need telephones, I'm going to need internet. What would your advice be for someone in that situation in terms of the kinds of things they should be looking for?
I would advise to look for a partner that may not necessarily be the underlying, you know, last mile provider like your Cablevision or Comcast or someone of that nature. You want to look for someone who can give you the benefit of that pricing and that bandwidth, but can give you the overlay and the service around cloud firewalling and cloud or hosted voice. You know, someone who's taken the time and the initiative to do things like sandbox and offer that as a service, DDoS protection, you know, up in the cloud, and as well as, you know, to take your voice network and make sure that there's a trusted part of it and there's an untrusted part of it, and only expose you to the outside untrusted part when you're making outbound calls, which can be routed all over the world today. So that would be my advice.
That's Edward Fox. He's Vice President of Network Services at MetTel. In industry news, Microsoft says it will have a patch ready on Tuesday for the Windows 0 day Google recently disclosed. Sophos has acquired Irish security analytics shop Barricade. A much larger acquisition has also been announced. Broadcom is buying Brocade for $5.5 billion. speculators expect to see a wave of mergers and acquisitions in the broader IT sector. NICE, the National Initiative for Cybersecurity Education, is meeting this week in Kansas City. NIST has been using the occasion to launch not only its CyberSeek jobs map, which we mentioned in yesterday's daily news briefing, but also a draft cybersecurity workforce framework. This may be expected to draw considerable attention and attract considerable comment. Your suggestions and reactions can be communicated to NIST by emailing them. Comments are open until January 6, 2017. Also at the NICE meetings, one heard about NSA and its Life Journey partner, who are offering a Day of Cyber for students. Registrations have already passed the 5 million mark. Finally, a couple of our stringers are down in Washington today for the annual CyNet Showcase. We'll have a full report in upcoming issues of our daily news brief. The CyNet Showcase always features the CyNet 16, 16 innovative startups selected from a field of hundreds. We'll close today by congratulating all of them. This year's winners are, in reverse alphabetical order, Vera, Threat Quotient, Safe Breach, Risk Sense, ProtectWise, Prelert, Post Quantum, Phantom Cyber, Passages, Menlo Security, Intercept, Digital Shadows, Datavisor, CyberX, Contrast Security, and Blackridge Technology. Congratulations to them all. Their predecessors have established a terrific track record. And again, that list was in reverse alphabetical order. You're welcome, Vera.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
Joining me once again is Jonathan Katz. He's a professor of computer science at the University of Maryland and also head of the Maryland Cybersecurity Center. Jonathan, saw an article come by on Ars Technica about some Google researchers who had set a couple of artificial intelligences to sort of team up together and try to come up with some cryptographic stuff. Explain to us what was going on here.
This was pretty interesting work, actually. What the researchers did was they set up three neural networks corresponding to three different entities, Alice, Bob, and Eve. And what they did was they just programmed these neural networks to try to search for algorithms that would allow Alice to encrypt a message and send it to Bob, who would then be able to decrypt it and recover it, while simultaneously hiding the message from Eve. And then they basically just let these algorithms run until they converged on something where Alice and Bob were doing well in terms of being able to recover the messages being sent, while Eve was not doing well, namely not being able to recover what was being sent. So essentially, they just let the algorithms run, these neural networks run, and discover algorithms on their own, as it were.
And were these novel algorithms that they came up with?
Well, they were definitely novel. I mean, one of the things that's funny is that actually the researchers were not really able to characterize what algorithm Alice and Bob were using to communicate. So it was, you know, they could maybe discern some characteristics of it, but they didn't really have a good representation of what the algorithm was doing. All they knew was that it was some algorithm that was allowing Alice and Bob to communicate, while correspondingly Eve was not able to decrypt what was coming out.
And was that a surprise that Eve's ability to decrypt the messages wasn't as good as Alice and Bob's ability to hide it?
Well, so first of all, I don't want to sound too overenthusiastic here, because what the research ended up showing was that Eve was not able to decrypt, but that doesn't mean that somebody more clever who was looking in from the outside and using techniques other than those discovered by this neural network might not have been able to decrypt. And in fact, actually, the encryption algorithm that they were using, I think the researchers said themselves in the paper, it would have been possible for a cryptographer looking at it from the outside to actually cryptanalyze it. So the only security guarantee that they're giving for the encryption algorithm is that this neural network couldn't figure out how to break it. That doesn't mean that nobody can figure out how to break it. So from that point of view, just because of the way they set the experiment up, it wasn't surprising that it converged on a situation where Eve couldn't decrypt very well. I think really it's just a fascinating idea, and I'm sure it'll be pushed a lot further in future work.
Have these people never seen a Terminator movie?
It's funny. I was just at a conference last week, and one of the big things people were talking about was machine learning and how powerful it's getting and the coming breakthroughs in AI. And so it looks like that's the direction we're heading with everything. Fortunately, right now, cryptography is hard enough that AI hasn't cracked it, but this might just be the start.
All right, Jonathan Katz, thanks for joining us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire Daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. We are proudly produced in Maryland by our talented team of editors and producers. I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. And now, a word from our sponsor, SixthSense. SixthSense provides award-winning cloud-based automated endpoint and vulnerability management solutions to streamline IT and security operations. With its advanced platform, businesses gain complete visibility and control over their infrastructure, reducing IT and security risks and optimizing operational efficiency. With SixthSense, you'll get real-time alerts, risk-based vulnerability prioritization and remediations, and an intuitive automation and orchestration engine so you can focus on your core business goals, confident in the knowledge that your enterprise is secure, compliant, and running smoothly. To learn why enterprises choose SixthSense, visit SixthSense.com.